I'm a foodie and I enjoy learning about the process that brings great foods and beverages from idea to the table. And then I like tasting them and learning the nuances of what creates the most significant tastes, from coffee to cheese to distilled beverages. I did a tequila tasting in Mexico and recently bourbon, Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It really impressed me from the story to the taste. I grew up in Kentucky where horse racing and bourbon are famous, and I got introduced to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond Bourbon. It's produced by Heaven Hill Distillery, which has been and still remains family-owned since 1935, and I'm impressed with the bourbon's ultra-rich, smooth taste, and right on the bottle, it states that this bourbon is 7 years old, which is actually three times longer than what's required to be certified as bottled in bond. I feel with beverages, the longer the prep, the better the taste. Being a bottled in bond product means it must pass a list of seven requirements that set the standard for this quality bourbon. So look for it at your local store. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely and drink wisely.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Adversity builds character. We call it the ABCs of adversity. And as you said, I think for most people, when we're dealing with difficult situations, we either come out of it using it as a crutch or as an excuse for why we don't reach our potential, or we really use it as a harness to pull us forward.
Welcome to The Ziegler Show, where we inspire your true performance. I'm your host, Kevin Miller. In this show, we're talking about you and me and charging you with remembering who you are. And if you don't know, figuring that out first. So my guest is Lisa Grimes. She has a new book out that she co-authored with Paula Brown Stafford. It's called Remember Who You Are, Achieve Success, Create Balance, Experience Fulfillment. So Lisa and Paula co-authored the book, and they jointly run a consulting firm called Habergeon, Habergeon, which you can find at Habergeon.com. But Lisa's focus is living life meaningfully and on purpose and being connected to other people. She spent 33 years in corporate America with roles in management, sales, business development, multiple stints as a CEO of large companies. She's also been an entrepreneur. She spent a decade as a decorator, so she had more flexibility in her personal life. She adopted a child who was deaf and mute, and that was after being told that she couldn't have children, though through the initial adoption process, she then did get pregnant. So she's got two kiddos. We cover a lot of ground in our talk, and we give direct and candid focus to some of the challenges that women in the workplace face. So if that's you out there, if you're thinking about coming into the workplace as a woman, as a mom, you're going to want to hear this. And guys out there, those of you especially who are married, this is something that I think you need to hear. I know I did. So we dig into some of the big and volatile issues between men and women in the workplace and just the cultural expectations of moms. So tons of value for all in this show. But yeah, you ladies especially will want to hear this. And I do, again, think the guys, share with your wives or the women you care about, share this show and the message. I think many women will get significant comfort and freedom from what Lisa shares. And I do make some call outs to us dads to step up our game. You can connect with Lisa again at Habergeon.com, Habergeon. But you can buy the book, Remember Who You Are, there at that website or, of course, wherever you buy books. It's doing incredibly well on Amazon right now, so you can find it there. So I'm going to get started with Lisa right after sharing some great resources with you. Okay, friends, here then I bring you an incredibly valuable, insightful conversation with Lisa Grimes. Well, Lisa, as I often do with guests in our little intro information that we filled out, ask them if they have any experience with Zig Ziglar, which most do. Yours pertains so much to the message we're talking about today. I just want to read it real quick. Can I do that?
Sure.
All right. You said, I still have a copy on my shelf with plenty of highlights of See You at the Top that I still reference. I just looked. My copy was printed in 1981. I'd say one of my favorite quotes was, your success and your happiness start with you. And I have to mention the overall premise of Zigs about are being designed for accomplishment, engineered for success, and endowed with seeds of greatness, all powerful, true, and influential in my life. When I got into your book, Remember Who You Are, and even more so just your personal bio, I thought that you are walking out the Ziglar legacy right now in all that you're doing, and obviously have been for a long time. That's beautiful, and he is waving at us from heaven right now with a big nod.
Well, thank you, and I take that as a huge compliment that that you would say that you think I'm walking out what he said, because that was clearly a goal. I started my kind of formal career out of college in 1985, and I have kept my hands on that book, as I mentioned to you, since then. It was one of the very first business books I ever read, and just the whole premises resonated that a lot of it is who we see ourselves to be and not comparing ourselves to others, but using the strengths that we have been given to use. So thank you.
Well, and your statement there of your success and your happiness starts with you. Now, this book, Remember Who You Are, Achieve Success, Create Balance, Experience Fulfillment. You know, I read it. I'm a guy. It is, I'll put it right there at the top of the list with any great personal development, self-help book I've ever read. It's so much pertains to me. However, you are a woman. You speak to women. We have a lot in the audience, and I really want to hear from that perspective today. And so when I ask, you know, who the message is for, picture who's the perfect person in the audience. Who is the woman and where are they at? Because there's a lot of women who you're not speaking to. You're speaking to this. You want to resonate and elevate this person. Explain who that is a little bit.
Well, the ideal audience that Paula Brown Stafford, my co-author, and I wrote for when we started was really going to be kind of 25 to 40-year-old professional women, because we wanted to give back. We do a lot of coaching of younger women in particular and wanted to reach that audience. Mm-hmm. We then, as we continued to write, found that our book was resonating with women throughout their careers. And so I would really say career women, people that are, you know, women that are professionally out in the workforce dealing with all the daily challenges of being a woman and maybe a wife and a mom and maybe getting more education and doing lots of other things. And as you saw, it's for men and for women, but that would probably be the sweet spot. Professional women who are looking for success, balance, and to find a sense of fulfillment or purpose in what they're doing.
Well, and I appreciate how you guys wrote the book. It is so personal. You guys are so authentic and vulnerable in the book. And even as my wife, she, you know, stayed at home after having baby one, and then we had a lot and homeschooled and was out of the career force. She's now entered it again and doing great, but now she's looking at backing out of some of that. But just with the myriad of things that she deals with amongst our family, our businesses, our kids, and her own endeavors and her own callings and service work and all these. What you wrote, I want her to read it. I don't know if she'll even say, am I a career woman? But she, when you say a professional, she is a pro, and you're speaking right to her.
Oh, yeah. And professionals are also stay-at-home moms, because that is the hardest job I ever did. I will tell you, Kevin, I took about a 10-year hiatus. When we adopted a child who had a lot of issues, including being deaf and mute, and I really needed to curtail my international travels to be at home and deal with that. And I've had several friends who have read it who are stay-at-home moms or who might work part-time. But, you know, I think it's the combined 65 years of being in careers, being wives, being mothers for a combined over a century, that all of that is really brought together in the book. So you're right. I think just for women in general.
Well, I like to get into the personal story. Our tagline is inspiring truth for performance. And just as Zig started most of his talk telling people where he came from so they could understand that, looking at context, what was it about your upbringing that helped or hurt where you are today? Now, with you, my gosh, you know, an exaggerated standpoint with somebody who had a hard life and came out, we would say is, you know, maybe they had a violent violent father, alcoholic, who told them they never amount to anything. And I read your bio. That's exactly what you had. This is not an exaggeration. I mean, that is profound. Tell us a little bit about that. As how did that relate to, how did you overcome that to then go forward and succeed and achieve as you have? Because as we know, a lot of times that's what takes somebody out. And yet that's the adversity, as you talk about, that helped make you. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. Chapter 8 in the book is adversity builds character. We call it the ABCs of adversity. And as you said, I think for most people, when we're dealing with difficult situations, we either come out of it using it as a crutch or as an excuse for why we don't reach our potential, or we really use it as a harness to pull us forward. And, you know, it was certainly my faith would be the very first thing that I would say that allowed me to come through a difficult childhood. I think oftentimes dysfunctional family can be overused, but I did grow up in a home with an abusive father. I was told I'd never amount to much. I got punished all the time because I talked too much. Well, who would have thought that sales would have been what propelled my career later on? Yeah. But I think it was learning to deal with those adversities that prepared me for some of life's later adversities. And, you know, probably one of the best examples I can give you, I went to college, went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and got a degree in pharmacy. And liking to be in sales and talking, I thought, well, gee, what a great background to be a pharmaceutical sales rep. And got my applications out and sometimes would make it even to the second or third interview. But I got 23 rejections from 23 different pharmaceutical companies saying, you just don't have what it takes. And you know, I went back for the 24th, I landed that job, and I outperformed my sales goals. And I don't say that in a bragging sense, but I just say it to say, I think that part of my upbringing, when I look at it from a positive perspective, which I think would be a Zig perspective, is how could it and would it propel me? And I think that it was building that tenacity, building that determination that I'm not going to accept no.
Well, on that accepting no, was there a time period? So here you are as a young girl with a father like that who told you such things. Was, when you look back, do you feel like your spirit, you didn't accept that then, you rejected that then? Or was there a later spot in time that you came to grips with it and decided to reject that?
It was a later spot in time. I would say I really did go through a lot of soul searching, a lot of self-doubt. And, you know, we talked about being vulnerable and being authentic. I think I would say it was even going through all those rejections, I felt such a need to prove myself that it almost went overboard. Okay. And so it was really I think that's why, you know, when I mentioned to you, like, not comparing yourself, one of the quotes and stories and writings of Zig of, you know, I don't need to compare myself and prove myself against anyone else. I just need to be the best me that I can be. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was a journey. It wasn't something that was instant. There was a lot of self-doubt. There was a lot of reading or a lot of talking through, great support. I married my high school sweetheart and he supported me, you know, through a lot of self-doubt.
When you talked about proving yourself, I think we see lots of stories where people do overcome in an effort to do that. And yet it's not always healthy. So I'm curious, on your journey, was there a time period of success or achievement, I'll say, in an effort to prove yourself that you had to divest yourself of somewhat from the attitude of proving yourself to achievement in a healthier way? Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, it does. And I would say it was really probably when a mentor said, don't leave dead bodies in your rearview mirror.
Well, that's a big statement. Okay.
It was like, whoa. And he said, I appreciate that you don't try to manipulate people. You're not trying to put people down. You're not trying to harm other people, but you are so determined to succeed, you're not looking out for everyone around you. And that was kind of the wake-up call of, ooh, I'm a little focused on proving myself and then doing the digging of why might that be. And, you know, because you do need to look to the root of the issue, in my opinion anyway. I need to find the root cause for why I behave the way I behave before I can really work on changing it. So that was really a moment when it became very clear to me that if I focus so much effort on helping others achieve, then I didn't need to worry about proving anything.
And that was my next question. So if you take that effort to prove yourself, to overcome, and that's a drive, and then you come to a different perspective like that, what I was going to ask, what took it over? But I think you just answered it. So that drive then became literally to help people. And I want to ask on that. And so you have this, again, you know, amazing career as an entrepreneur in the corporate world, as a CEO, on the board of nonprofits and other organizations. And you're doing that and you're having great success. You're influencing people through that. When did it happen? Was there a catalyst where you said, I want to take what I have experienced and expand that? And through this, like as you're doing through this book, you don't have to do that. You don't need it for your, I'm going to make a big guess here, for your income. You don't need it for your achievement. You want to get that out. Was there a time period there where you just felt called to do that?
Yeah, there was a time, and I would say it was probably over the course of the last 5 to 10 years that the call and the purpose really cemented following up on that conversation, when it really made me realize, well, you know, if I took all this drive and energy and ambition that I have and use it to help other people succeed, there was so much greater satisfaction when I did that and helped others achieve success and helped other people go out and start their own companies and help other people do those sorts of things, that it just became so much more fun to not be about me and not trying to prove anything. So I think it was a growing process. I think as my relationship with God continued to grow, I think as I continued to listen and really think on that statement of making sure I wasn't leaving dead bodies in the rearview mirror, that it really just, you know, made me decide more my energy should be focused on giving back. And I would say that probably really started in earnest about a decade ago.
Well, on that statement, that makes me smile. It's just such a big statement of leaving dead bodies behind you. I know you talk in the book about your, let's say it's a strength of your intensity. And yet in the book, you also talked about that, maybe going overboard in that as well.
Yes, it is something. Well, Paula and I both talked about it because I have been accused of being intimidating when I did not really realize it. She's been accused of being defensive. And it was like, wow, okay, let's take those words and figure out what we're going to do with them and be conscious. I certainly can say I don't think I ever intended to intimidate anybody unless it was a competitor in a sales position. And of course I needed to intimidate them, but I, you know, in all seriousness was not really, that wasn't on my list of things to aspire to, was intimidation.
And thanks to these sponsors for bringing us today's show. Well, so I'm going to ask a specific question, and it really comes from my own experience with my wife. I have she's a brilliant person. She is a very assertive person, maybe even into aggressiveness. And she and I have a daughter who's very similar as well. And they've shared their own frustrations, which I'm assuming you've experienced in droves, of having labels like that, intimidating, defensive, given to a woman that may or may not have been given to a man, probably lesser. And yeah, I can see it on your face. Tell me about it.
Oh yeah. Great, great question. Probably could take up an entire another show on this topic. We call it kind of the double bind because men are in the business world, certainly. And I think in general, men it's acceptable for men to be assertive and aggressive, and they don't necessarily get those labels. Yet when women try to have a softer approach, and we can tend to apologize and say, like, yeah, oh, I'm really sorry, it's a little hot outside today. Well, we don't control the weather, but it's a way of kind of bonding that we often use. Or, I'm sorry to interrupt, I just want to ask you a question. And then we're advised, perhaps by a coach, to use masculine language or muscular language. Well, then we kind of get called a word that I don't choose to use, because we get a label. Right. And it really is trying to find that happy medium. And it's where we spend a lot of time of coaching and advising women in that regard, of just things that we have learned, because it's a difficult situation for those of us women that are assertive, that tend to speak up, that perhaps are more direct. And we don't fit the mold, perhaps, of what what's expected. But I think my encouragement is, it can be done and is being done by more and more women. It's just a matter of finding what's comfortable to you. And I think our advice to women that feel, man, what do I do, is to go back to being you and to be authentic to how you are made, and don't apologize, but do get feedback and do be very, very self-aware if people are thinking, well, she's so assertive, she's intimidating other people. Well, then you might have to adjust. And it doesn't mean changing who you are. It just means maybe toning it down a little in certain situations. So I don't know if that answers your question. It's a loaded topic. And I think it is just high in the minds of a lot of women today. So I appreciate you asking.
Well, no, I agree. And if I can dare risk, put myself in a woman's shoe who's listening to this show right now, they may wish that you would do the rest of the show on that topic. Honestly, yeah, I mean, that's, with it being a volatile topic, we have a dramatic amount of our listeners are women, are business owners, are entrepreneurs, or want to be, and yet they are their moms as well. And they are doing, they're juggling. I believe they're juggling more than men, in all reality. When I look at my wife, she is, I mean, I'm juggling a lot over here, but her roles are, and when she steps into the workplace, it hits some notes that are just difficult. And I hear it from her, and I don't have anything brilliant to offer. I would say, speak to it more.
Well, I think a couple or three things. One, you know, we, and I speak for we, I think as women, I know I speak for both Paula and me, we do want equal pay for a job. We do want to have our opinions equally valued. We want lots of those things, and we push for that. But we do not see equality as being identical, because we are different from men. And so that's one thing that I think is a little different is, you know, we do think that we can have equal opinions and equal say and equal contributions in a lot of ways. So that's kind of one area. I think, secondly, to your point, Kevin, research has shown that women in the workforce still maintain, even when they are the primary breadwinner of their households, they still maintain the responsibilities of the home jobs, which are getting food on the table, or traditionally seen as women jobs, but, you know, getting children to and from school, going shopping to get new clothes, all of those things. And in surveys that have been done that have interviewed male executives, over half of senior male executives have either wives who stay at home or wives who have a part-time job. So they have a support system that helps them, you know, if they are traveling all the time, or helps them if they wind up having to stay late at the office, those sorts of things. So I think those are two topics that you brought up that are both real and dear to my heart, because it's something I've lived through. I am blessed to have had a very supportive husband, but I still think the roles of wife, mother, CEO of a company, you can go on. I'm a daughter. I talk to my mom almost every day still, or at least every other day. I mean, I talk to my husband's parents. I, you know, those sorts of things. The list goes on and on. We talk about it. It's chapter 4 in the book. It's probably the number one requested topic for us is the juggling act, mm-hmm. because we have, as women, we have so many balls to keep in the air every single day that at some point we have to say, these are the balls I'm keeping in the air, because if I let them drop, I'll barely, if ever, put them back together. That, for us, it's our faith and our family. Yeah. That's what we call kind of our crystal balls, our glass balls, or our careers. We put a lot of effort into building our careers, and we don't apologize for it. We've got rubber balls where we spend lots of time on things. But you know what? I realized early on in my career, fortunately, I was a career mom, and I did not have to bake a homemade from scratch birthday cake. And I didn't have to, you know, do all of those things. My kids were quite content with me stopping by and getting a sheet cake, kind of rubber balls, things that aren't going to matter. But I think as women, we often juggle some balls we need to just simply drop, like feeling guilty because we missed the recital because we were at work on a business trip. And then we carry around the guilt and keep apologizing to our kids to the point our kids feel guilty. Or, you know, and I can give you plenty other examples, but I'll pause in case you have another question there. But there are just some balls like that that moms carry around that we need to let go of and go back to filtering things through our key priorities.
Most of today, you will be indoors, likely your home or your office. I am as well. Even with my treks out into the woods, I spend a lot of time inside. And we're going to think about 20,000 breaths. According to the EPA, the indoor air is 2 to 5 times more polluted than the outdoor air, sometimes up to 100 times more polluted. At my studio, we have heat being forced through old ducts. I walk on carpet full of years of junk. No idea what's floating in the air that I'm taking constant gulps of. The solution is an air purifier, and Air Doctor is just the best. Air Doctor filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants and allergens such as pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold, bacteria, viruses. They do it so your lungs don't have to. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Go to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Kevin, and depending on the model, you'll receive up to 39% off or up to $300 off. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. So to get this special offer, go to airdoctorpro.com. Use promo code Kevin, airdoctorpro.com, promo code Kevin.
Friends, I'm pretty candid about my lack of financial prowess. Money and numbers are fairly Greek to me, so I need a lot of guidance. One of my closest friends is a wildly successful wealth manager, and I'm working on some financial literacy and just continually seeking guidance. So I ask you to check out yahoofinance.com. Nobody knows it all, and Yahoo Finance is an incredible resource for the rookies like me or the seasoned investors. You know, before my dad passed away recently, Dave Ramsey and his wife Sharon flew down to visit. We all got to spend a day together, and I was at yahoofinance.com just now. I saw multiple news flashes from Dave and other people that you respect, and they're hitting so many of the hottest areas in finance today. So it's a place to get a snapshot of all aspects of your financial interests, and if you have them, your portfolios. I hadn't realized Yahoo Finance is the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. So for your comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. One more time. yahoofinance.com.
Thankfully, the days of building a business website, then having this massive endeavor to integrate an online store are gone. Today, Shopify has fixed all that. I had one business where we actually built the entire website on Shopify's platform. So whether you're just starting out or you're selling $1 million of product already, Shopify is just the industry leader. It works the same for physical products or online and digital, and Shopify is just hands down the best out there. Most importantly, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. It's 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Getting people to buy is not that hard, at least to the buying point, but getting them to actually give their payment info is, and Shopify is king in that department. They also have top-tier customer service, which I think is critical. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Kevin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/Kevin to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/Kevin.
No, I'm just sitting here making timestamps to have my wife listen to because it's so golden. That right there, the making the perfect birthday cake and being the PTO mom, and God bless those. And my wife feels guilty for that while she is out doing her absolute calling as unto God that I revere, but she's still in a social norm with expectations and struggling with it.
It is. And I think that's why it's our number one requested topic, because I think that your wife is not alone in that regard. And I think often women can tend to focus on perfectionism, which adds to that. We believe that there's a huge difference in seeking excellence versus seeking perfection. Wow. And so, you know, there are just so many things, things in that regard as well. A friend wrote Breaking Up with Perfect, and I thought it was a great example of, you know, we really do need to break up with perfect. We were never created as perfect. There's only one perfect person ever, and it's not us. And, you know, the ball that we juggle of comparison, and I think that goes back to one of Zig's quotes about we aren't meant to, you know, be the best somebody else. Yeah. We don't compare our gifts to what others were given. Well, how often do we try to spend our time focused on being, oh, I don't know, why couldn't I be that good of a cook? Why couldn't I entertain like that? Why couldn't I? And we spend our energy trying to work on our weakness, when instead, if we spend a little energy trying to work on a strength, we could excel and help other people in that regard.
Amen. And again, I can speak for myself. We deal with this. We deal with the guilt that she has for not making dinner. It's really been over the past couple of years where we've had to change the verbiage around that, with me saying, honey, you don't like doing dinner. I do. I look forward to coming home and cooking. Let's just let that be. But it's still that cultural thing. And I know, and I appreciate you in the book, and even as we talked before this, that you, and I'll tell everybody out there, there's no men bashing in this, pointedly and heartfully, there's not. On some of what you said, it's hard for me not to, though, on the expectations that we have in our joke in our home. We have a lot of kids, and I am their father. I am their parent. I don't babysit the kids. I take care of them jointly. So if there's any guys out there who talk about babysitting your kids, don't ever say that again. You're their parent. You are their father. This is a co-deal. And there is. It's amazing in this day and age how much we still see along those traditions, those ruts. I'd say those traditional ruts.
I think that ruts is a good word. It's expectations, and they're often false expectations. But when we take expectations of others and put them on ourselves, then it leads us to guilt.
Yeah.
I don't know if your wife has ever read Give Yourself a Break, but that is a book I would highly recommend for dealing with guilt. It's by Debbie Wilson, and it really focuses on the difference between guilt and false guilt. And a lot of people don't talk about it. We do, as you saw, talk about it a bit in the book, because we think it's so important, especially for women, and not taking on guilt over things that, you know, if we do something wrong, if I hung up on you right now, I should apologize to you and I should feel guilty for that. But if there were to be a lightning storm and we got disconnected, I shouldn't really feel guilty that that happened. And that's just a trivial example compared to many, but I think it shows truths for how we can put guilt or accept guilt in our lives. And then we're not our best self because we're walking around under this cloud of guilt. And I think that women can find freedom when they realize that, you know what, it's okay. You and your wife have a relationship in your marriage that you enjoy cooking, and she doesn't need to feel badly for it, but I've walked in her shoes. So I get it. Yeah. I get it. It's okay for my husband to do the laundry. It's probably not okay for him to iron, because I think he intentionally doesn't iron well just so he wouldn't have to do it. But, you know, and the other thing, and we talk about this a bit, is outsourcing. And we met as competitors in an outsourcing industry. So it was natural when we wrote the book to talk about outsourcing. But from a personal perspective, you know, there are just some things that you don't have time to do and outsource or trade with somebody. If, you know, if you can afford to pay somebody, maybe you're giving them some income and they can do your dry cleaning or they can run, pick up groceries or they can do something like that, but outsource it to give yourself a little more time or trade with a friend who does enjoy cooking. And maybe your wife enjoys being with kids. You've got a bunch of them. So I'm going to assume that she does. So maybe she trades sitting for dinner, you know, those sorts of things. So I think getting creative in the way we juggle our schedules is also important.
Yes. She loves our kids. No more than that though. So nobody call her to watch your kids. She won't do it.
Okay. All right.
Well, I want to get into a couple of the aspects of the book, and we're not going to go through all of them because folks go buy the book, get in it, dig into it, study it. It's just significant. I love how you guys wrote it. I love how you co-authored it together and shared different perspectives. And again, just how your own spirit and personality comes into what you wrote. But to me, it was significant that you started the book off talking about women connecting. And I'll be transparent in that. I have a lot of guys who I walk through life with, whom I'm in contact with, who I have coffee with. And I have noticed, and I'm saying this, and I'm going to put myself in a dangerous spot maybe or on the spot, but I noticed that I'm seeing that happen, at least in my, maybe I'm in a bubble, that happened more than women connecting. And I'm wondering, is that a cultural thing, or am I just happening to see a little bubble? But what is, well, I'll ask you, you put that as a primary beginning in your book, Women Connecting. Tell me why.
A couple of reasons. We did meet as competitors and we had kind of determined we didn't particularly like each other. So it was kind of interesting, but we didn't like each other, not for any weird reason other than we were always competing for the exact same business because we had identical jobs in the top two competing companies. But what we noticed once we were persuaded to meet as an opportunity to become friends is what we shared in common was the theme that we didn't find that women necessarily supported other women in a way that often had meaningful connections, certainly in the workplace. And in that regard, we, you know, 30 some years ago, I mean, both Paula and myself were the only female in the division of our first job. So it was nothing for us to be the only female. And then occasionally you'd have other females. And we found that there tended to be maybe put downs or insults or compliments that were really backhanded insults of other women versus kind of a rising tide lifting all boats. And I think that that is changing. We certainly, it's one of the reasons that we wanted to kind of hit the road or write the book and hit the road together to talk about women supporting other women in that regard. And I think, you know, in this day and age of social media, that you see the glorious, happy, fun, everything's perfect pictures, and that's not reality. And I think it's hard for some people to be vulnerable and to be authentic. And whether or not it's tough, since I am a woman, I can't answer if you're living in a bubble or not. I can't answer you from a business perspective that as women, we can sometimes take things or disagreements a little more personally. And we call it, I think in the book, we called it professionally pout for a little while because we take things a little more personally, whereas guys can have a disagreement and leave to go shoot hoops together 7 minutes after the meeting. So I don't know if that answers your question or
it does. It does seem. And again, I'm just going to say this from a place of ignorance. I am not a woman, that as we talk about the workplace and there being some areas of with being a woman coming in the workplace, there are some areas where you feel a little compromised it from a, you know, from a perspective, a cultural with men, that there would be more of an inclination to support each other as to be, you know, adversaries in that. It doesn't seem to make sense. Why would that be?
You know, I wish I could answer you the why. I'd probably have the best-selling book in the world if I could answer that why. Okay. But, you know, we just kind of think from our experience, it used to be because they're often, there was so much talk about the glass ceiling and only a certain number of women were going to rise. Well, if you kind of were the only one left standing, then maybe you'd be the one to rise. And I think that fortunately, a lot of women are trying now to help other women. So I think the tide is shifting in that regard. But I really, you know, I don't know why that is or would be.
Well, the next spot, and I really want to give focus, maybe primary focus here, is your first chapter. I know Paula wrote it, but I know you did it all in collaboration, was Build Your Brand. And as I got into some of your content, it just seems really powerful when we, especially when we look at a, you know, from Ziglar, we're often talking, Zig is always talking about your self-image. And to me, you guys really hit the roots of it and talking about building your brand. Now, of course you're talking, you know, in somewhat of a career concept, but I would have anybody go read, anybody, man or woman, but to have a woman go in there and understand that. So give us a little bit. I'm always curious again, why that was the start. I'm assuming because it is such a root issue.
Well, it is a root issue because with the title being Remember Who You Are, well, you have to define you.
Who are you? Yeah.
And so we just felt that that was where we needed to start the book. And I think most of us, probably most everyone listening, we're all familiar with corporate brands, but we find oftentimes people don't necessarily think intentionally about their personal brand. And it's, well, you have a job and you want to support this, or you're involved with this organization and this is their mission, i.e., you know, what is their brand? It's their mission statement. Mm-hmm. And we just felt that it helps give you kind of a direction, and it also helps to be intentional. You know, we talk in there about the Ernest Hemingway 6-word story, and it's pretty challenging to narrow, at least it was for us, to really start narrowing. Well, how do I describe myself in 6 words? But we've kind of taken it a step further in a workshop that we do occasionally. And what's your 1-word story? And that's when you really, you know, have to start focusing. If people meet me and I only have 1 word to describe myself, what would that be? And my word is connect. Paula's word is serve. And it's interesting because those two work quite well together, but I love to connect people to others. I love, you know, to that gets my juices flowing. I love to connect them to being the better you that they can be. And so I think just figuring out what your brand is, and we talk about this also in Remember Who You Are. If integrity is part of your brand, and you get to a difficult situation and, you know, maybe you're in a corporate environment and your boss says, look, if we could kind of fudge just a little bit on the numbers just this quarter, we'll catch it back up next month. Well, if your brand's integrity, your decision is made. Mm-hmm. So you aren't struggling necessarily so much as to, well, how do I tell my boss I don't want to do that? So I think that it helps you figure out what you want to do. It helps you figure out, you know, do you want to stay at home? Do you want to, what do you want your neighbors to think of you as? And, you know, we're big on bringing your whole self into your brand. My brand shouldn't be different on this call with you than my brand is to my neighbor, than my brand is to people that I work with. So your brand is you. And I think that is something that can be very freeing for women, because I think in particular, we often have this, well, I'm going to be this at home and I'm going to be this when I'm not at home. But your brand needs to be your brand. Doesn't matter where you are.
So when you say that, you're talking about, to me, the word that came to mind is being authentic. And yet there's also the, how do you balance that? Being authentic with who you are, and understanding who you are, being clear, having clarity on that, and yet juggling the different arenas where you are in, where you need to modify a little bit. You know, the DISC profile, I was brought up with it was a lot of personality profiles, but that one, that's one. And high D. So as a kid, I was right away, you came out high D. But if you're just a thoroughbred high D, you can often be a jerk. There is room, I think, for, you know, modification, knowing and understanding that. And juggling that authenticity, but being modifying according to where you're at. How do you do that and remain authentic?
Well, I think a lot of that goes back to emotional intelligence and reading the room and trying to see where you are, because, you know, it's kind of like when we were talking earlier about intensity is a really good quality to have, and being tenacious is a really good quality to have if you want somebody to get something done. But when it crosses that kind of proverbial line of being intimidating or seen as aggressive, then it's probably not so much. And so I think you have to read the audience that you are dealing with to judge how much of yourself to bring, if that makes sense. You're still bringing you. I mean, if integrity is important to me, then that needs to carry with me wherever I go. If being intense is part of who I am, which it is, I'm fairly intense. You probably figured that out by now. But I have to adjust if I read body language or see that the person that I'm meeting with, maybe they're not a high D. Maybe we don't share that level of directness and high D-ness together. Mm-hmm. I need to just be in tune, and I can still be my authentic self. I just maybe back it up a notch for the comfort and comfort level in the room. But I do think it's discernment. It's, you know, wisdom and reading the, like I said, emotional intelligence, who you're dealing with, and the body language and the things that that I think you learn over time. But your core brand, I'm a connector, and it doesn't matter if I'm at work or I'm on the air talking with you or I'm out in my neighborhood, my brain is going to function in that regard. And then I certainly have, hopefully, other attributes. I just have to learn kind of what strength to bring them.
Yes, you connected me to that book. I already pulled it up while we're talking here. Give Yourself a Break by Debbie Wilson. I'm going to buy that thing as soon as we get finished here. So thanks for that connection. I want to ask a little bit more, though, about this. You talked, so like when you do the workshops, in essence, you're working with so many people on building your brand, and you mentioned the word integrity. Would you throw out some more just so people can relate and kind of get a flavor as they want? Now, I want them to get the book and go through it, but other words, integrity, what are some other top level words that generally come out that people want to aspire to in building their brand?
I would say people like to be seen as thorough. People like to, and that really ties into whether the word's thorough or completing a task. People like to be seen as responsible, reliable. I think that a lot of people like to be seen as creative. And I think compatible is a word that we often hear as well, and passionate. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, we so often run into people that are doing what they do because they're doing it versus having really spent time figuring out their passion. And we talk a lot to people about what are you good at, what do you really like doing, and what can you make money at, and where that overlaps is your passion. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, is what are you passionate about? Because that really needs to feed into your brand.
Yeah. You asked the question in there, and you said it in essence a minute ago, what do you want people to think of when they hear your name? To me, that's easy to nod to. The amount of people, including myself, who've ever written something down as an answer to that, it's got to be slim.
I think it's very slim based on feedback that we've had in the workshops we have done. But I think it is also, it has proven to be a powerful exercise, because when we do sit down to answer that question and put pen to paper, it causes reflection, which I would dare say not all of us take as much time doing every day as we might benefit from. But it causes us to also say, well, who am I? And is this who I really want to be? Or would I really like to be the next level up from that? If people trust me, do I really want them to see me as having integrity and that being, you know, a top value? Maybe I want them to trust me more. Or if people see me as, okay, well, she's sort of reliable. Well, what could I do for them to say, wow, you want the job done? Give her a call. And, you know, Kevin, I think that also applies. We haven't talked about it, but at the end of each chapter in Remember Who You Are is a letter to her younger self from a woman, what she wishes she had known maybe 20 or 30 years ago. And I think that really ties into kind of figuring out your brand too. If you sit down to write a letter to yourself as to what you wish you had known 20 years ago, it really causes a similar level of reflection. And when we set out to do that, we thought that, gee, we're really asking these people to do something that is going to require a lot of effort and thought, and maybe we're putting a burden on them. And the thankfulness that we got in return, because how many busy people sit down to take the time to pen a letter like that? Mm-hmm. So I think it's the same thing with the brand, is really, you know, it's a useful exercise, and maybe you want to do it in a paragraph or a page. It's a lot easier than trying to condense it to six words, but I think it is just a very helpful exercise. And, you know, it's something that we like. We were just on a college campus recently talking to young, you know, people. It's not too early to start thinking about what you want your brand to be, because you can shape it and create it and let it drive who you are and what you do.
Well, I could talk for another hour on this, but I'm going to end on a piece, because it really, to me, ties back, or I'm going to ask if you feel like it ties back to your connectedness, and it's the aspect of being self-aware. I mean, that is, you know, when we go back to the classics, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and we go to Zig's book, it's so much of it requires an aspect of self-awareness. And so much of what we've talked about almost assumes that there is self-awareness, and yet we see other people and we find out about ourselves so often that they're not self-aware. We're not self-aware. And I struggle with the ability for any of us to increase our self-awareness by ourselves, that we don't know what we don't know. It's the most dangerous thing out there. I don't know that we can do that without other people, which to me brings us back to what you started the book with, is connectedness. Is that a fair way to look at, or how would you instruct someone to increase their self-awareness?
I agree with everything that you said. I think self-awareness is difficult because, as you said, we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. I think asking, it's one thing in the corporate world when you do like the 360 feedback and you get your boss and the people that work as your peers and the people that work for you, and you get all that anonymous feedback. We encourage people to go to their trusted friends and ask for that, you know, whether it's one word or 10 words or 5 words, and see if you see a theme. You know, we're all going to get words from people that are just the one-off words, and we perhaps have to put them in a category as one-off. Maybe they don't apply. But if we start seeing a theme there, like, well, she seems like she's intimidating, or, man, she always seems to be high on herself, or, man, she certainly seems to not have a very high level of confidence. That certainly is something we deal with a lot and have seen much more in women than in men. You know, if we start seeing those, then there is a pattern, and then you can sit down and again start saying, gee, I like this aspect of myself. How can I continue to work on that and make it even a stronger strength, versus I was hoping I would not be seen that way, so what can I start doing? But, you know, that takes vulnerability. It takes having relationships with people who are willing to give you that level of feedback, because, you know, as well as I do, it's easy, much easier to pay someone a compliment than it is to give them some hard, critical feedback, because you got to care enough about them to give it to them, because it hurts.
Yes.
It hurts both ways. But I think that's the way you get it, is asking, because how other people see you is your brand, whether you like it or not.
One last question here on this. As this book, you and Paula put it out, came out in March of this year, so it hasn't been out that long. As you've seen it go out, influence people, and you've gotten feedback, has there been anything that has, I'll let you answer it two ways or both ways, feedback that surprised you? Something that people got out of it that you may not have been expecting as much, and or has there been feedback that it's just been a grateful confirmation that that's what you were hoping people would get out of it?
I'd say we have been surprised at the number of people internationally that have read it, that have sent us feedback that more surprised, like, wow, how did they even get this book? But, or where did they, you know, hear of us, or what made them get the book? But I would say most all, it has just been very rewarding to have people say, you know what, I got this and now I'm getting it for my daughters, or I'm getting it for my wife, or I'm getting this for my husband. Or, you know, we've had, and maybe a bit of a surprise, we have had several men say, you know what, I'm getting this for my sons, because it is just very insightful and they need to read it too. But I think just having people say it's freeing to have kind of that level of authenticity, to see that I'm not the only one, because I think that we can often get into a spiral sometimes and feel like, oh, well, we're the only one that didn't have something handed to us, or we're the only one that had to work through this particular issue or tragedy or difficulty. So I think a lot of it has been affirmation of, wow, this is it. Because each chapter could have been a book in and of itself. We were just trying to come up with something for today's busy woman to be able to sit down and read in a couple or 3 hours. So I think just lots of affirmations for those stories.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and if people don't have time to read the book, reading the letters at the ends of the chapter, we certainly don't have all the answers, but the 9 letters are powerful letters. These women were very transparent, very vulnerable, and women from all over the world, all different, you know, lives. And that has been very eye-opening, of just using that as a challenge to really say, write the letter to yourself and maybe write a letter to your daughters.
Well, I can say I get a lot of books. I get about a book a day. And I really appreciate how you put it together. And yeah, that is one that stood out. Those letters there are powerful. I didn't think about that. Maybe a Cliff Notes version, read the letters. Although if you do, folks, you're going to want to read the book. So thank you guys for taking the time to pouring yourselves into giving this message. I will be taking my book home tonight to share with my wife. And yeah, I want my daughters to read it as well. I can all do it, but we'll start with the girls, because I love what you have put in here and how you're leading in that way. Thank you so much for being with us, Lisa.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. I enjoyed it.
Well, there you go, friends. Incredible perspectives and info from Lisa. Again, you can connect with her at Habergeon.com. That's Habergeon. And you can buy the book, Remember Who You Are, there at that website, or again, wherever you buy books. I am passing my copy on to my wife to read right now. Did you get value from the show? If you did, will you please let Lisa know specifically and leave a review in iTunes for us at The Ziegler Show? It's just the best way to thank her and help others know what they can expect and get out of this show. So thank you in advance. Coming up next, show 608. We got a valuable and fun topic. Zig gives a short message telling us of how often people have told him, Zig, hey, I was feeling down so low, then I read your books or listened to your messages, and I got back up again. And while that is great, of course, Zig asks us, he says, wouldn't it be better to be working to stay up and not get so low to begin with? He even makes that statement, it's easier to stay up than to get up. Well, from that message, I asked this question. What do you do consistently to strengthen and prepare yourself, one, physically, two, mentally, and three, emotionally, to be well and better withstand life's challenges? Then if you'd also state, number four, which area do you struggle most with? Well, we got a ton of responses on Facebook. Tom Ziegler and I talked through them. I think you'll be really interested to hear what all was shared. It got us both inspired, I'll tell you that. Well, hey, till then, thank you, as always, for letting me walk with you as we inspire our true performance together.